Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings, and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher. I'm also known as the Food Healer, and today we've got a really cool show. We're going to be talking to Catherine Ferguson, human and animal psychic. Catherine is an interspecies psychic reader, flower essence consultant, and Reiki master. She's been devoted to metaphysical studies since the early 1980s. In the late 90s, Catherine began reading companion animals and has been writing a weekly pet psychic column for the Waterfront Journal since April 2002. Catherine teaches an introductory class on animal communication and contacts living pets as well as those that have returned to spirit. Catherine is calling in from New Jersey. We'll give contact information at the end of the show. Hi, Catherine. Are you there?
Hi there. Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much for being on. How are you today?
Oh, not bad at all, in spite of the weather.
Yeah, no kidding. It just started raining here. It's just icky.
Yeah. Well, as one of my neighbors said, it's better than snow.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? I thought I saw a flake earlier and almost burst into tears, but I think we might be past it. So I'm hoping. I'm just hoping.
Send out good vibes.
Exactly. We'll do what we can to warm up the temperature a little bit.
Mm.
So I'm so thrilled that you're here, and I just want to get started. I've had so much feedback from people that want to talk to you and want to hear about you, so we got lots of questions for you.
Okay.
So your first one, basic question, how did you get interested in metaphysics?
It's a little hard to say. What I had the opportunity, I stopped teaching college, mm-hmm. and I suddenly had all this time on my hands because I wasn't preparing classes and I wasn't doing research that I could present papers to. And I was starting a new career, but that wasn't taking up my time totally. And somehow or other, I just got interested in metaphysics, and I found several places that I could go to in my area. I was in near Harrisburg then, mm-hmm. and there were several groups meeting, and I just tried out several groups, and it was all good.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it really was.
And it's so funny, whenever you're looking for these kind of things, they just kind of appear. Like, I'm shocked that there wasn't stuff around Harrisburg. That's great.
Well, I was really shocked. I was getting books out of the library, and I thought, I don't believe this. I am finding all these metaphysical books in the public library. And I thought, did I walk through some sort of invisible, you know, the other side of the mirror, maybe?
Seriously.
Because that's sort of like the last place you would expect it.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, I believe in the adage that I learned later on, that when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to me when I found all these groups, and then the library was stocked.
What a trip.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it really is.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. That's great.
Yeah.
So have you always had pets, even as a small child?
Not really, because my father didn't believe in having animals in the house. We had a cat for a while. My mother liked animals. We had a cat for a while, but then she somehow had the idea that he should be able to go out of doors, and he did.
Mm.
And he would come back, but then he came back less and less, and then we didn't see him anymore. Mm. So I didn't have pets until I was an adult, really. Because, you know, my father just wouldn't have been interested.
Yeah, and then when you first started getting pets as an adult, did you have, like, were you aware of being able to communicate with them at that point, or were you just a typical pet owner?
I think I was a typical pet owner. The only time I felt that I was communicating with animals was as a child when I was in my bedroom. The next-door neighbors had a huge cherry tree that, you know, half of it came over in our yard.
Mm.
But it was a great attraction for birds.
Mm.
And whenever there were certain days when they would just be chirping like mad, and I'd wake up to this sound, and I thought, this is going to be a good day because the birds are happy, and that's what they're telling me, that it's going to be a good day.
Nice.
So I would then, you know, get up, go to have breakfast, and announce to my parents that we were in for a good day.
Aww.
But that's the only time where I remember feeling that I was getting a definite message.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when, over a period of several years, my mother would take me to the zoo frequently, and I was crazy about the goats because you could actually touch the goats.
Yeah.
They, you know, there's a fence, but you can lean over and touch them, and of course there's no danger. So I would start pulling up grass on my side and handing it to them to make them come closer to me and stand with me for mm-hmm. a while. And after a while, I got the idea that there wasn't enough grass on my side of the fence, so I would start bringing bags of grass from our backyard. I would just go out and rip up grass and put it in a paper bag and carry it with us to the zoo, and so I'd have plenty of food to give them then.
That's so sweet. That's so cute. I can't stand it. I love it. I was the same kid. I was totally the same kid. If I knew there was an animal around, we had, my grandparents lived near a pond, and so we'd bring food for the swans and for the ducks, and, you know, if there was a squirrel around, it was going to get fed no matter what. And that continued and continued until a swan, this male swan, just got really mad at me and beat me to a pulp. So that was the end of the feeding the wild animals.
I was so surprised when I found out that swans aren't exactly gentle, and you better watch out.
I didn't know.
Can't get them angry.
They're so big. I was like 4 or 5, and I remember he stood up, and he arched his neck, and he spread out his wings, and he was my height, and I was like, that's it. I'm out of here. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
They're beautiful.
They look so graceful. You don't expect them to do anything mean-spirited.
Yeah, but they really, they have an opinion, and they stick with it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you communicate to animals?
Well, it's telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I might actually speak the words, or I might just think them.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing so, the animals are seeing the images in my mind, and that's what they're picking up.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Excuse me, go ahead.
No, go right ahead. I apologize.
Oh, I was just going to say that that's what they do. They send me pictures when they answer me.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they send me pictures doesn't mean that that's the only way I receive the information, because I do ask that my guides work with me and that the animals' guides work with them.
Yeah.
So I get the information in a variety of means. I could see images. You know, they might show me what their house looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Or what some of the people in the house look like, or, you know, other animals. But I also will hear words.
Wow.
And I'll also have feelings, so that I might, if my left foot starts feeling sore mm-hmm. all of a sudden when I'm talking to the animal, and my left foot was perfectly fine before we started, I know that something's going on with the animal's left rear foot.
Yeah.
Because they're showing me, I mean, I'm feeling it where they're feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll also have maybe knots in my stomach or something going on, and so I'll know that something's going on with them. And then the other way I get the information is simply that I'll feel it.
Wow.
And I'll know it.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been times when I'm not sure what's coming through it, I'll start speaking, and the words come out. Those are the words that they're transmitting to me.
Wow.
So there's a variety of ways that it comes through.
And so if you have, let's say you're communicating with an animal that's in really, really severe chronic pain or something like that, do you get that much pain if you get their emotion, do you feel the extreme of the pain that they do?
No. I feel enough to know that there's something going on.
Right.
And it also goes away.
Okay.
So I feel it, I would say, probably long enough so that it's clear to me that that's what the animal is telling me. And then once I tell the pet parent,
mm-hmm.
or if I'm doing this in writing, once I write that down, the pain goes away because I don't need that information anymore. I've already received it.
Right, right.
And it wouldn't be as intense as what they were feeling. Actually, I think when I receive pain, that pain is the method. They might not necessarily feel an awful lot of pain, but they're showing me where something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not working smoothly. Yeah.
Can they get specific about, like, if they have an organ issue? Can you get that, or are you just kind of like something inside hurts?
There are times when, I do feel a certain, I'm aware that it's a certain organ, but there are other times when I'm just saying it's, you know, it's around the stomach, so it could be, you know, liver, kidney, it's just not coming through all that clear for me.
Yeah. And then, are different types of animals easier to communicate than others?
You mean like cats versus dogs?
I guess. I mean, like, do you ask for permission when you start a session?
Yeah.
So what, have you had an animal say, like, no, I don't want to talk to you, that kind of thing?
They don't say it right away, but they can be a little slow in giving responses.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling, though, has been that whenever I've had animals that weren't answering my questions, it had to do with the pet parent, that they were blocking something in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember all the details, but there was someone I read years ago, and she had certain questions about her dog. And I wasn't able to answer the questions directly, but I was getting all this other information. And she would, after I explained, you know, one set of things, and I'd look at her again, and she said, okay, but what about, and she'd repeat her first question.
Mm.
And I thought, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
I'm giving you all this information that you wouldn't have known on your own, and I wouldn't have known if I hadn't specifically engaged in a conversation with the pet.
Yeah.
And yet it's like, okay, but, you know, I don't care about that. I want to know this.
Mm.
I think it's very possible that the information, unfortunately, I don't remember the specifics of it now, but I think it could have been a circuitous way of answering her question,
right.
Even though I wasn't able to tell exactly what the connection was. I think that the animal was probably making some attempt at answering.
Mm-hmm.
But just the fact that she could block out or ignore a whole area felt strange to me.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, or I only believe that the animal is obviously going to feel that energy and maybe feel threatened by it. And, you know, like a small child when it's, you know, how do you feel? He feels fine, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But are, like, cats easier to talk to than dogs, for example? Or do dogs tell you everything and cats just kind of sit back and...
No, I don't think it's a matter of the species. I think it's a matter of the individual animal.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I've had dogs and cats that just, you know, spouted on and on and on and had a lot to say. And others who would just answer a few questions and then act as though, well, you know, I've got other things to do with my time to talk with you, really.
Like, lady, I got bones to find, okay?
Right. But I think, but getting back to the question about which, if there's a difference, I find, for me, the difference is in how close the animals are to us physically.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that dogs and cats have a lot to say in general. I did do one... Komodo dragon.
Oh, wow.
And she had a few things to say, but I really had to sort of push with questions. She didn't volunteer very much, and it felt very strange. But I think it had to do with the fact that we don't sleep in our beds with Komodo dragons.
Yeah.
At least I don't know anybody who does. And it's the animals that are really, you know, sharing not only our homes but our beds and, you know, go driving around with us in cars that are the ones that have the most feel like communicating with us the most.
Right.
Well, also, too, they've been domesticated for the longest amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really, and another thing, too, is I do believe that most of them come incarnate with the idea that they're going to work with some humans and mm-hmm. help out humans. So talking to me would just be a way of facilitating that part of the bargain that they made before they came back to Earth.
Right, right. I have a question, and you are the person to ask. I've been wondering this for years, and everyone I've ever asked gives me a crazy pants look, so you may lose all your respect for me after I ask you this question, but I'm going for it anyway. Okay, here is my question. This is insane. I can't believe I'm doing this on the air. If you have, let's say you have a dog in Greece, okay, and you have a dog in Africa, and you have a dog in, let's say, Germany, can these dogs communicate with each other, or is there some kind of a language barrier?
Well, they're doing it with telepathy.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
Okay. So
that's not a crazy question.
Well, I've had people say to me, well, it depends, you know, they might have a different accent or something like that. And it was, you know,
no.
It's kind of like, I don't know, this is nuts. So since they speak in pictures, there is no language barrier because they're using images with each other.
Right.
Okay. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. All right, Catherine, we have to take a quick break. It's going to be for about a minute. We're talking to
okay.
Catherine Ferguson, human and animal psychic.
Today's break song is called King of Kings by Knife Show on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
And we are back, talking to Catherine Ferguson, human and animal psychic. Catherine, I have a question that kind of leads from the last question. If dogs and cats and animals speak in images, are they psychic?
I think that they can see a lot of things. And they're extremely sensitive. So they can pick up on body language. I think that they are psychic to some extent. I don't know when they're always tuned in, though.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point, because, yeah, you do have to be tuned in order to use that power. Yeah, I was wondering also if animals, like, if they can see and hear things that we can't, besides, like spirits, for example, not just different, you know, frequencies or colors.
Yeah, they see spirits.
And they're more in tune than us, for example.
Well, I think that part of it is a matter of it could be their eyesight. They can see vibrations that we can't see. But I think that there's another element, when I've gotten this idea from several people that I've worked with talking about their pets who've passed.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling has definitely been that in lots of cases, these people who are mourning are afraid to see the pet spirit.
Mm.
So I think that our own fears at times can block the ability to see these short visits that our pets will make to us.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. All right, then I'm going to ask you my next insane question that I never ask anybody. But
do you mind if I backtrack a bit?
By all means,
the language
please.
Question, because I have two comments on that.
By all
means.
You
asked if dogs in Africa and Germany could speak to each other.
Yeah.
Okay. That question, I've gotten a related question, and that is, I've got this dog that I speak to in English all the time. My mother is going to take care of the dog for a while, but she speaks to the dog in Russian. Is the dog going to go crazy?
Mm.
And no, because the dog is going to get the images.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't going to be any problem. But related to that as well, a friend of mine ran a German language house in Middlebury,
mm-hmm.
and she had a cat there. And, of course, all the people in the house had to speak German all the time, so the cat was used to hearing German all the time. And then my friend, after I guess it was 2 years maybe, she stopped doing that, and she had the cat on her own in her separate apartment. And there the cat would hear English. And for a while the cat looked around very strangely. The whole music of the background noise that she was hearing was now in English and not in German.
Funny.
And so she really felt strange about that. She got used to it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
My friend was aware that the environment had changed, and she was really puzzled about what was going on.
Wow. Wow.
So, okay, I had to tell you that before you go on.
No, and I'm really glad you did, because that's really, really cool, and it's great information. All right, here's my next question for you, which is some people are going to think of where both of us are just wacko, but hey, I had an apartment in the city, and I had a cat who never would come anywhere near me if I was in bed, and I had a very high bed. So one night I'm reading, and I'm facing the wall, and I feel her jump up on the bed and circle and sleep, like go fall asleep between my thigh and my calf. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. And all of a sudden I look down, and my cat's on the floor with eyes the size of dinner plates, and I look by my legs, and there's an indentation. There's an actual indentation. So my question is, is there such thing as ghost kitties and ghost dogs and ghost animals?
Wow. The only experience I have had is, personally, I would feel walking on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see indentations, but I didn't check either. Until the next morning, it would have been too late.
Yeah.
But I would feel some movement on the bed, and I felt it was the cat who had died, maybe a month or so before, and I would feel something, some movement next to my pillow. But in your case, well, yes, and in doing readings for people, I would see at times a transparent figure of their departed pet sort of around the ceiling,
wow,
moving through the room.
Wow.
And they were aware, some of them were aware of that, mm-hmm. feeling that the animal was there. But let me ask you, though, with this this cat that you felt, this wasn't, you hadn't lost the cat. It was just some stray cat that wandered in on your bed.
I think so. I mean, I'd had a cat when Moo Kitty was my first, official my cat. When I lived in Key West, I had six cats adopt me, and so they lived there. And the leader of the pack got very sick. He wound up with crystals and died. And so Indy and I were very, very close, but besides Indy, I've never had a cat. So it was kind of, I didn't feel a feeling of familiarity or like, oh, yay, it's, whoever. It was kind of like, what is going on kind of thing, And the funny thing was that Moo Kitty had tons of fear and didn't like other cats. And anytime there was another cat around, it was really bad. And as soon as I turned around and saw this indentation and saw my cat with this face of like, run! It was like, what is going on? It was like, this is really bad.
Oh, wow.
But she didn't freak out, and she kind of was, she finally just walked away. And as soon as I realized what was going on, it kind of just all dissipated and just kind of disappeared. So it wasn't like a consistent, like, oh, look, Ghost Kitty's back. Or, it was only an isolated incident. So,
Yeah, well, it takes a lot of energy for them to materialize.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one reason why we don't see them often or at all. It's easier to feel weight on the bed than it is to see the image of the cat. Well, since your cat was so scaredy, so much of a scaredy cat, it wouldn't take much to...
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I mean, a photograph of a cat probably would have set this cat off. You know, it's really like,
yeah.
The poor, she had a very, very sad life before I got her. So, I mean, she had a lot of baggage, but she was a good girl. But
uh-huh.
Because we're talking about this, I really want to talk to you about what happens after an animal passes on. I've got tons of questions from people that were contacting me, asking me to ask you this. So tell us what happens.
Okay. I have to tell you, though, that what I have seen is a matter of what pets have told me when I've done readings.
Okay.
So what I see is when they first pass over, they rest. And very frequently I see them lying down, perhaps wrapped up a little bit like a cocoon, could be on a pillow, could be on a bed, and just resting. And they'll talk to me, but I don't see movement because
mm-hmm.
they're just, you know, recharging their batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And I will sometimes see other pets with them, pets they know.
Mm-hmm.
I might be made aware of guardian angels with them
mm-hmm.
who are helping them out, who are going to work with them about analyzing their past life, evaluating it,
mm-hmm.
the life that they just had, and what their future path should be.
Mm-hmm.
After they've been there for a little while, I've seen pets who are in training to work with children in hospitals.
Cool.
And this is as spirit pets. And I've seen them specializing so that some of them will be working with very small children.
Mm-hmm.
In one case, I saw a pet who was in training to work with children who were handicapped in some way
mm-hmm.
and who would never be able to live on their own, but would be in a group home.
Mm-hmm.
And so these pets would be able to help them with their special existence
yeah.
because they might be able to live away from their parents, but they certainly needed to have some sort of monitor in the house who would help them out. And I've seen pets who were entertaining
mm-hmm.
in a theater-like setting.
Oh, wow.
And I think that the audience was all animals, but I couldn't be sure because it wasn't
amazing.
Totally clear. And they would be on the stage performing to the great happiness of those in the audience. And I've seen other pets who didn't show me anything other than the fact that they were walking around in the grass having a grand old time.
Mm.
Feeling very free, the weather was beautiful, and they were just walking and loving it.
Nice.
So,
when animals get reincarnated, does an animal stay an animal, or can it reincarnate into a person and vice versa?
Well, I'll preface that by saying that most religions don't believe in transmigration.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, if you're a human, you stay a human with
mm-hmm.
all your incarnations. If you're an animal, you stay an animal in all your incarnations. But I've had animals show me other forms. A man asked me to read his dog, and he was upset because the dog would just break away and run away.
Mm.
And the dog showed me that he had been a horse in the western part of the United States when it hadn't been totally settled.
Wow.
And he had been captured and then broke away. And so this was a very important point in his life that he didn't like being civilized and having somebody ride on his back, and he would try to break away, and I think he did break away. And so this dog was acting as though he was the horse back then, and that's why he would break away. And it was as if this the other life was taking over, and he wasn't totally integrated into being a dog in this life.
Wow.
And then I've seen... there was a man who came to me with his dog, and the dog showed me that they had had a past life together in Roman times.
Wow.
And they both worked in a temple, and the man had been a priest of some sort in the temple, and the dog had been a boy, I guess maybe a teenager, and I don't know if he was being... I think the man was his mentor, as I remember now, and it was, I didn't expect that, but that's what the dog told me.
What a trip.
So I think most likely the people, the animals stay within a certain species, but I think they might tend to come back as dogs or tend to come back as cats, but they can change.
It's so cool. I mean, I love energy work because it's energy, it's molecules, you know. So when you get down to those basics, yes, this is all possible. This, I mean, I know it sounds really woo-woo, but this is all, if you really start looking into physics and you really start looking into what everything's made out of and energy, it's everything's just down to energy, really, you know. And
right.
So all of this is very, very possible. My next question for you, is there a heaven for animals, and what about a hell?
Well, I can't imagine a hell for animals.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are not malicious.
True.
You know, what we may interpret as being nasty could be simply basic instincts.
Yep.
You know, they kill to eat. They don't kill for the sake of making somebody miserable.
Right, right.
So the idea of a hell for animals, to me, just doesn't make any sense. Well, the heaven, though, is, I would say, you know, what I've mentioned before is this... the afterlife, and I have seen the idea that they get involved with various job assignments. They get training, and they have the job assignments. I don't know if that's going to be for eternity. They might decide on something else at some point. You know, they and their angel, their guardian angels, might decide on something else. But I've always felt that they were very happy with their assignments on the other side. I did a reading for a family at one point, and they wanted to contact their dog. And the dog had been on the other side for a few years, I think. And anyway, the dog was happy to see them. And she told me what she was doing, and it was, I think it was some sort of healthcare work in hospital. I don't think it was terribly clear, but you know, the family kept asking me questions, and the dog kept getting more and more impatient because she really wanted to get back to her work. It was fulfilling, and she loved seeing them. She wanted to say hello and, you know, hi, everything is fine here, I'm glad everything is fine with you, but she really wanted to go.
That's so
and
funny.
It was kind of hard to be able to tell. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, my clients that, you know, you're shut up already.
Exactly. It's like, she's got to go back to work. She doesn't want to talk to you anymore, you know.
Yeah, right. You know, get over it.
She's busy.
She's busy. Get a life of your own.
Exactly.
But anyway, so, yeah.
And so what about, like, people that have passed? Do they wind up my sister is making me ask you this. So my mother's passed, and she had a million pets growing up. And always. We always had dogs. We always had cats. We had occasional reptiles, all kinds of stuff. So when she passed, was she able to get back together with the animals that she's had?
Well, I do believe that when people pass over, the animals they've been close to will greet them. That is, if they're available,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they could have already reincarnated.
Right, okay.
But I do believe that these animals will greet them and help them to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
When people ask me, are they together, I have to hesitate in answering that because I'm not sure that they all stay together, you know, in the living room and, you know, watch
exactly.
TV together the way they did here, that it's forever and ever. I do believe that they see each other again, but I feel that we all have paths, and since we each have a path to take, we're not going to be necessarily together. Like, you know, say you and a good friend go to college together, you don't all take the same courses.
Exactly.
And, you know, even if you get together after class, you're not going to be together in each class each year.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, kind of hesitate about the concept of being together. I did with one person who asked me about her father and his favorite cat. And there I could say they were together and they were working together because I saw her father at a desk. And I saw the cat as being sort of his assistant.
Aww.
And the cat was working with other cats. She and the man would decide together on certain programs, whatever it was that they were doing. That wasn't made clear to me. And then it was for the cat to implement this.
Wow.
The other cats. So there, they were really working together. They were together.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I didn't feel, in one case, the way I explained it was that, you know, your grandmother is at 101 Kingston Avenue,
mm-hmm.
and the cat is at, on the next block over.
Okay.
At 201 Kingston Avenue.
Okay.
That they're close, but they're not in the same house, and they're not together all the time.
Okay. That makes more sense anyway. I mean, because the whole belief of, you know, you'll be with your pets forever once you pass. It's a nice, I guess it's very comforting for people, and it's a nice belief. But yeah, with reincarnation and all that, it's not going to be feasibly possible. And that's something I've always wondered about, too, is, you know, if they're back doing their duty, then they can't come and visit you. If
right.
they're not there anymore, you know.
Yeah, I think it's more of a comforting feeling, and that's why I have trouble answering it when it's someone who's sitting before me teary-eyed.
Yeah.
And, you know what they want the answer to be.
Yeah.
But I'm not feeling it quite the way they're asking it.
Well, I admire you for telling the truth. Because a lot of people would go, yep, they're right there, and oh, look, they're so happy to see, you know, and that's mean. If it's not real, that's just mean. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You have to do it gingerly, though.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. So I sent you a couple case studies.
Right.
I would love to talk about those if you are willing. Murphy belongs to Kristen. He's about 9 years old. He's an Affenpinscher Chihuahua mix. And I know Murphy personally, and Murphy is incredibly aggressive. He's got food aggression and incredibly dominant aggressive behavior. He's incredibly sensitive to sounds. He marks everything in the house, but literally he's not just marking, he's urinating on it. It's not like, oh, that's mine, oh, that's mine. It's like, I'm going to pee on this. And they just had a child recently, and they're keeping Murphy. They're really, really good parents because this is a tough dog. And they just are trying to figure out what's going on and what they can do to make him a little happier and a little more calm.
Okay. How long have they had him?
They've had him for a couple of years. They got him at the age of 9. I think they've had him for about 5-6 years.
Okay. Well, first of all, I got the idea to use my pendulum, for Star of Bethlehem for all three of the animals you mentioned, and they all tested. He's feeling Star of Bethlehem. I know you know what it is, but you know your audience don't necessarily.
Yeah, tell us.
It's a Bach flower essence, and it's used for the emotional and physical trauma due to accidents or abuse. So even though he's in a loving home now, he's still acting out from the trauma he had before when he wasn't properly treated. I wanted to ask you, the food aggression, there's another animal in the house?
No. No, if you walk by the bowl, it's, you know, and what they're really worried about now is because they've got the child. So they feed them very safely, like the kid's nowhere near the thing. But still, you know, if the baby drops food, Murphy's figured this out, but baby's still not friend, baby's just food supply. And if you reach, like if the baby drops a Cheerio and you reach down to get it, Murphy will go after you and he will bite and he will draw blood.
Yeah. Okay. I think... what I would like for them to do, all right. So we've already established that Star of Bethlehem is for it. I didn't test for any other essences, but I would like for them to talk with him, starting off by telling him why they adopted him, why they think he's great, and why he's still with them, and all the things that they appreciate with him. And they would each do this separately. And because they're going to say different things, and I feel that it's more, it's going to come across as more sincere to the pet if it's an individual statement expressing that person's feeling and style. So, and they should do this lots of times because he really needs it. He's hardcore.
Yeah, he is.
And just say, you know, Murphy, you're great. You're the greatest dog since sliced bread. You know, whatever comes to mind, and also explain, you've got a cute face. I like the way your, you know, your fur curls around your nose and your mouth. You do such and such a thing that I think is really funny or really sweet. And just do that, I would say, you know, for at least a week to do that. Before then moving on to talking about how you have enough food here and nobody's going to take it from you. So you don't need to growl and try to chase anyone from your bowl. It's not going to disappear.
Yeah.
And also explaining that the baby can be a playmate when he gets old enough. And how old is the baby now? Is he about two?
He's about two. Yeah, he's about
two. Yeah, okay. That once he gets to be steady on his feet, he can be a lot of fun. And, you know, they can spend time together. And also that he can provide a valuable service to his family by protecting the little boy. That make it clear that he's not a replacement, but he's rather an additional family member.
Okay.
And so the family has expanded. Nobody's getting replaced. No one is losing position. Now, the baby might require more attention, and that might be draining some of the attention that he got before, but it's not for lack of love.
Right.
What I feel with him, though, is a certain amount of frenzy and like he's wired. I have this feeling of him, you know, looking back and forth and not being totally sure of where he is, what he's doing there. So...
they just moved, or they moved a couple months ago as well, so he's in a new environment.
Oh, okay, so that could have something to do with it. All right, let me try something else. Okay, I just tested for walnut. And
Perfect.
Walnut is another Bach flower essence, which is good for transitions, new home, et cetera. And if there's any sort of problem with the baby, you know, accepting a new member of the family, that might help as well.
Okay.
But they can talk to him about why they moved and that, you know, they're permanent now, I suppose. And that, you know, just tell him, you know, he can take a little while to adjust. And that's for the marking that everybody knows it's his.
He exactly
doesn't need to do that. And I wouldn't do this right away, but tell him that humans really don't like smelling the marking scent.
Okay.
In their home, and they don't like it, and it's really not acceptable.
Okay.
Marking is for outside. It's not for indoors. And there's absolutely no reason why he needs to do that, because everybody knows this is where Murphy lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's Murphy's house. You know, there's no
yes,
other pets.
Yeah.
It's Murphy's house, without a question. So it's not like, surprise, you know.
Yeah, and if any animal happens to wander in, they will smell his fur all over.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't need to, he doesn't need to mark. That's just extra work for him, and he's not making anybody happy.
Okay. Okay, cool. Thank you. I would love to get to these other two, but unfortunately, you've got so much awesome information, Catherine, that we are out of time. I would love to have you on sometime in the future if you'd love to do a show, or if you'd like to do a show on, like, mini readings and just to continue talking about this. I'm fascinated by this conversation.
Well, I'm having a ball talking with you.
Yay,
so
I am too. You're
to
awesome.
Back. Yes.
Cool. So for people that want to reach you, find out information about you, all that good stuff, can you give us an email or a website?
Sure. My website is www.cferguson.com. And so it's it's one word. And Ferguson is F as in Frank, E-R-G-U-S as in Sam, O-N.com. So there's information about what I've done. Some of my columns are there. And my my email address is petpsychic7@yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm.
petpsychic7@yahoo.com.
That sounds perfect. And Catherine, thank you so much. I've really, really enjoyed this. This has been great. I definitely want to talk to you in the future. I'm Celia Kutcher. You can find me at foodhealer.com. Next week, we're going to be talking to a dog groomer, and we are absolutely going to be having Catherine back real soon. So have a great week, and we'll talk to you then. Take care.
Whole Foods Market. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.